Well, welcome back to HealthLink On Air, produced each week by Upstate Medical University and Upstate University Hospital. This is your host, Tricia Torrey, every patient's advocate. It's time for our monthly look at the healing muse. Dr. Deirdre Nealon joins me in the studio this morning. Welcome back, Dr. Nealon.
Thank you, Tricia.
I look forward to this every week. And listeners, most of you know that Dr. Nealon joins us from Upstate Center for Bioethics and Humanities. She's also editor of The Healing Muse, a journal of literary and visual arts. Now, some of you listeners have obtained copies of The Healing Muse. You may want to take a moment to find them and follow along as we get ready to discuss two more pieces this morning. So, Dr. Nealon, among all the pieces we've discussed, I'll tell you, this one actually made me laugh out loud. I had to read it a few times. There are a number of references I didn't really understand, but in the end, it didn't really matter. So, will you read it? It's called, What Do the Physicians Know About This?
I'd be happy to read this. It's by a poet named Oliver Rice.
And is Oliver Rice someone we know?
No, he's another stranger that became a friend over the internet.
Very good, very good. Well, please read it to us.
All right. What do the physicians know about this? I leave the book open to the page where the human trachea is illustrated, meticulously in full color. Passing, I pause to study the larynx, astounded that I possess such an organ, that billions of extant persons are equipped, as were multillions of ancestors, with a replica, an appendage, apt for delivering the phonemes of all the languages that have ever been. Adroit with lungs and tongue and lips at emitting inflections, innuendos, in the dialects, the accents of Aristotelians, mariners, entrepreneurs, thugs, soliloquies of Zulus and Tangs, Moldovians, Chaldeans, Cro-Magnons, of Kafka, of Euripides, leaping syllogisms, unbearable explanations, vulgarities, fatuities, peyote dreams, prayers, unanswerable songs.
Now, the first impression I hope listeners are left with is the fact that I understood enough to laugh. Because, you know, I don't always get all of these things. But first of all, the language usage is just beautiful, even if you didn't understand what any of it meant.
I know. Just to read him out loud a few times, he just keeps pushing you and pushing you through his explication of how wonderful it is that all of us can speak.
That all of us can speak, and that this one organ in our body makes all this sense.
Yes.
And
right.
Then when you go back and look at the title, What Do Physicians Know About This? Yes. That's what made me laugh out loud. It was like, do they get it?
Yes, exactly. And I think that's again part of what the muse is doing in having this kind of dialogue between patients and practitioners, clinicians, that sometimes, although we are using the same words, mm-hmm. we are speaking two different languages. And in this poem, he's looking at, one would imagine that it's probably a medical textbook, looking at the description of how a larynx works. And yet what he comes up with is, we've all got one, we've always had one, and what do we use them for?
Exactly. It also sort of, it's that bigger picture of, there are the mechanics
Yes.
of such a body part.
Exactly.
But then there's the usage of such a body part.
Yes.
And that's really the question. Do the physicians understand what this is used for?
Precisely. And I mean, we can have the heights of literature. I mean, some people would think Kafka makes you crazy because he's so bizarre. But you can also have Aristotle. And then we use them, unfortunately, we use our larynxes for vulgarities,
right.
He says as well.
Right. I was actually as struck by the contrast he was drawing with the ones that he didn't draw. He didn't say things like, he didn't mention anything about emotions.
A really good point.
About love or even crying sounds when we're upset. And that's partially the larynx as well, the crying out
point.
And that kind of a thing. So he was talking about the mechanics, but he was still talking about it in somewhat of a clinical, detached way.
You are getting to be so good at this.
Oh, bless you. You're right. Seriously, when you look at it, that is the difference. You know, often I draw a parallel between what an auto mechanic can do and what a physician can do. You know, when your car is broken, you take it to an auto mechanic, and I draw a lot of metaphors when I talk about that. But of course, the huge difference is that as human beings, we have so much more at stake.
Yes.
And that's really what this is about. There's the one level where we can look at this, and if something is wrong with it, we can either appreciate when it goes well or we can fix it when it goes bad.
Right.
But we also have to understand the bigger picture the more important use for this part.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, when you go to the auto mechanic, you don't expect him or her to give you a whole lot of sympathy or care about what brought you to that particular place. But if you notice at the end of this poem, the last two things that he mentions are prayers and unanswerable songs. And we do expect physicians and nurses and the people that are taking care of us to understand that sometimes the unanswerable song is exactly what needs to be sung.
Exactly. There's so much more at stake
with
the larynx than there is with a part of a car.
Yeah, I agree.
That kind of a thing. It was very interesting. And as I said, I laughed out loud. I didn't laugh reading the poem. I laughed when I went back and read the title.
Yeah, so good. I'm glad you did. I think he would like that.
Well, thank you for sharing that one. Now, the next one, there's no laughter here. It's probably more like grateful that we've come as far as we have. Diagnosis 1972. The author, Lisa Roney?
Yeah, she's written a book about her experience of being a diabetic. She was diagnosed when she was 11 years old and in 1972. So as you say, this is a long time ago in terms of medical advancement.
Exactly. And I think that was what I was struck with, was how far we come. And I believe that's what our listeners are going to get to. This is not so much poetry. It is, but it's more of a story being told from a child's eyes.
Yes.
So if you will share, you're going to share just parts of it with
us. Yeah, we're only going to read a little part of it, but I do hope your listeners will go back and take a look at the entire poem. It's quite dramatic.
Mm-hmm.
So from the perspective of an 11-year-old child, diagnosis 1972. It was the worst kind of fiction, but I was at the age and of an ilk that meant I thought everything in a book must be true. I absorbed it, like milk, I am afraid, into the very structure of my cells, my unsuitability for love. No wonder I believe in the power of words. There seems to be no other explanation, though I have been looking for years for something else I could fix. I was 11, and the doctor deemed it the Bible by which I should live, Diabetes for Diabetics, 3rd edition, 1971. Photos of a woman's thigh edged in a black and white skirt, her fingernails delicately arranged around the syringe that step by step she plunged into her bulging, grasped flesh. This is how you do it, form without face. Pink diagrams of a man's body sported a matrix of white squares, showing me precisely where to aim the needles. Next page, four photos of a headless man in tight swim trunks invited me to cover him with tracing paper and mark each site with each date of my injections. I stared at his veiled crotch instead, but always took my shots, knowing that poorly controlled diabetics should be automatically refused employment. Already I knew work would be my only option because, tucked discreetly in the back under special problems, five paragraphs contemplated doubts about a diabetic girl marrying, since you will be a financial burden and may not be able to fulfill your wifely duty of bearing children. At 21, I sliced words from these pages for a collage, but that did not remove them from my body, which has taken decades to unlearn them.
It breaks my heart.
Yeah, yeah.
It breaks my heart that anyone would have put a child through that.
I know. But let's remember what you said at the beginning. We have come so very far.
We have come so far. And fortunately, it looks like Lisa has the ability to look back.
Yes.
And assess it for what it was.
Yes.
At the time, I'm sure that when she was given this book, her doctor and maybe her parents thought they were doing her a favor.
Right.
That she would better understand what her lot in life would be.
Yes, exactly. And at that time, I mean, obviously diabetes was much more unknown and filled with fear. But I think that what Lisa Roney talks about in her newer book, which discusses her entire life, it's so important that we understand what message we're giving people when we give them the book.
Yes.
Or we give them the diagnosis. I mean, we can't just hand these things out in a vacuum.
Exactly right. You know, it's I'm very much into understanding and managing expectations.
Yeah.
Helping people understand, and sort of that under promise and over deliver kind of thing. But I don't believe in subtracting hope. And it strikes me that that's exactly what they were doing, was subtracting her hope.
Yeah, I mean, and she tells you how many years it took for her to unlearn these words that they got, you know, almost carved into her, that mm-hmm. she would not have a full life.
In many ways, it's we would look at it today and say it was almost abusive.
Yeah, we probably
emotionally would. Abusive yes. to her, to tell her you'll never marry, you can't work.
Yeah.
Employers would be smart not to hire you.
Yes,
a man would be smart not to marry you.
Yeah,
yeah. It really is almost emotionally abusive, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I agree.
But we have come a long way. I have friends who have children, young children, who have been diagnosed with diabetes, and that's actually the good news, because those children were sick and they needed that diagnosis to be able to manage it. And the technological advances alone to help children and older people manage their diabetes is amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And that is the good news. You're right.
It really is the good news. This has been, a real contrast in our two pieces this morning.
Yeah.
We're looking forward to next month. Next month, I expect you'll have an announcement about the new version.
Yes. In fact, next month, we'll be reading from the new book.
Oh,
so
we will.
So that'll be very exciting.
Excellent, yes. Excellent. Well, we'll make sure that we put links on the HealthLink On Air website for people who want to purchase the new one.
That would be wonderful.
Very good. Well, Dr.
That.
Deirdre Neeland from the Upstate Center for Bioethics and Humanities, we look forward to seeing you next month.
Thanks, Tricia. I look forward to being here.
And listeners, we're going to take a break. Please do stay with us. This is Upstate Medical University's HealthLink On Air on 570 WSYR.